You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Locked On Jaguars podcast. This is a Jaguars podcast. No, I'm kidding. This is Locked On Seahawks. This is Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman. We're obviously having a tough time after what just happened on Sunday. The Seahawks got decimated by the Rams by a score of 42-7. And it was just a bad game. It was one of the worst in the Pete Carroll Seahawks era. And like it went the worst way possible. I think the only worst way is if you had more injuries. I had a loss for words for this game.
Before we dive into this terrible game, I am currently actually in a Twitter feud with the host of Locked On Jaguars. I think we've both blocked each other over a heated debate over LA transit policy. So Locked On Jaguars is dead to me. Long live Locked On everything else. That's what I got to bring before we dive into the worst game in the Seahawks have played since Matt Hasselbeck got hurt in like 2006, maybe. Since like a Matt Hasselbeck injury plagued season, this was the worst Seahawks game I've seen.
Yeah, it was by score as bad as the New York Giants game a few years ago at the start of the Pete Carroll era.
Yeah.
And it seemed like at the start of the game, like, you have the bad fumble luck, you have Jimmy Graham making the drop, and Russell Wilson getting pressured from the gate.
The Tanner McAvoy fumble is so terrible.
It was...
I don't want that to get lost to the ages.
I have something special.
Shoulder.
Just carved out for that play in Tanner McAvoy.
Oh, okay, my bad. But like, he just got hit in the shoulder. It was nothing.
Yeah, it was horrid. I like I said, I have something else to say about that. But you know, from the gate, even when it was 6-0, you're like, all right, well, you know, at least the defense held. But like, it just snowballed. It was like watching an avalanche. Really, there's nothing else comparable. I think, you know, just the slow start, I'll start things off, the slow start buried them. You see the Seahawks start slow, obviously, in a lot of these games, and they kind of scrap and claw their way back into it and make it close, especially in the fourth quarter. But, you know, there was none of that on Sunday. They just were slow out of the gate, and the Rams did not, you know, have a hitch. And
yeah, we talked about the potential going into this game of game flow being super important and getting an early lead being super important. Obviously, the Seahawks did the opposite of that. And why it was super important is because of what we saw from the Rams offense, which is when they don't need to take shots, they're not going to turn the ball over. And if they're not going to turn the ball over, they're going to be able to salt away a lead if we don't have our run defense at full strength. Without KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner, our run defense was at the opposite of full strength. It was at no strength. So no credit to the defensive line, who should have done better. But like, the game couldn't have been harder on our defense given the way we started.
Yeah, the offense didn't do the defense any favors, obviously. And whenever Todd Gurley had the ball in his hands, it felt like he could take it to the house on any given play. He wasn't getting touched for at least, you know, 2 yards after he ran the ball. And the Rams offensive line just got, you know, such a great push whenever they decided to run the ball. You kind of wonder why they ever passed it on those early drives. I think that the defense, they got pressure on Goff to begin the game, and they made him uncomfortable, and that's where they had success in holding them to field goals with the good position that they had. And it, like I said earlier, it just got worse from there. Everything turned it. As much luck as the Seahawks had in the balls bouncing their way earlier in the season, they had the opposite of that times 10.
Yeah, and really the only game where the Seahawks have sort of had that run of luck was against the Rams.
Right.
We saw similarly the punt game against in the first game against the Rams. Tavon Austin put the ball on the ground twice. We recovered it once. They really got nothing going this game, and it really hurt A, that there were a bunch of uncalled penalties, but B, that Justin Coleman was in and out of the lineup, meaning our gunner situation kept getting flipped around. But it really hurt that Farrell Cooper was so much better than Tavon Austin was right. in the past. I mean, they were gashing us for 20 yards a punt. I mean, oh man, the punt situation in Seattle this year has been truly dire on both sides. And as much as I genuinely love John Ryan, he is old. This is the end of John Ryan as the Seahawks punt. It's got to be, and it's got to be for a couple reasons. But like we're not just below average. We're 31st in the league in net punt yardage, I believe, at this point. He was kicking them through the back of the end zone. You look at the NFL as a whole, and you average like one touchback a week from all punters at this point. It's crazy how good punting has gotten in the last, honestly, 3-4 years. And yes, some of that is Johnny Hecker, but league-wide, punting has improved by so much. And given that the Seahawks are going to need to improve this offseason, and we're not going to get too much into that today because, like, and plus we have plenty of time to talk about that in the future. But I will say, fixing the punter is a easy, low maintenance thing to do. You just go out and scout him and get him as an undrafted free agent. Like, you don't need to like invest a high pick in your punter to your punting game.
We're not the Jaguars.
Yeah, exactly. Again, the Jaguars are dead to me for life because of an awkward Twitter interaction about transit policy. They're dead to me. I'm rooting for the Patriots in the AFC now. I'm a monster.
Look what the Jaguars fans have done to Spike.
I'm a monster.
I don't know who I'm talking to right now. But, you know, like
Coach
you said,
Steelers, go Patriots.
Wow, this is. I think I'm done recording today.
We're in a really dark place here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast.
I was about to get a little darker too. I was gonna say we have a lot of time to talk about this going forward, especially in the offseason. But I'm on board for a full overhaul in the special teams unit, whether that be coaching, whether that be the punter, the kicker. The gunners,
the kicker is gone. The kicker is gone. Man.
Exactly. The gunners, like we said, DeAndre Elliott was out for the year. But I mean, you have Nico Thorpe
did his job, and Justin Coleman when he's healthy, is a pretty good gunner. I mean, the gunner situation and DJ Alexander.
Yeah, like the biggest thing is injuries in the gunner and the coverage situation. But you know the kicks.
Yeah, because we use guys like Sherman Chancellor in our punt coverage. In our kick coverage, like those guys being out, like we were playing guys whose names I'm forgetting, like that linebacker who we signed last week and we talked about
Dawson,
the one on TCU, PJ Dawson, he was getting snaps on special teams. Like, who is that? I don't know. Of course they're gashing us. The Rams are healthy and they're good.
We talked about the possibility for them to deal with a lot of injuries going into this week, and their injury report came out, and it was a bunch of guys I didn't know. And then it kind of made me take a step back, and maybe the Seahawks didn't win 34-21, like I was saying. And obviously, the Rams scored twice as many points as my prediction, and the Seahawks did not score 34 points, obviously. But like I said, from the start, you know, this game didn't go well. There's bad luck out of the gate. Really, it was forced bad luck, giving the ball to Tanner McAvoy, who has so many more negative plays than he does positive. Like, it's insane. I think Danny Kelly
tweeted that.
His bad play to good play ratio is among the worst I've ever seen. I don't get every time he touches the ball, nearly every time he touches the ball, nothing good happens. So
you can't fumble on the shoulder hitting the ball in the NFL. Like, I would fumble that. Like, yes. Like, yeah. I, a guy who played, like, middle school football, like, 100% would have put that ball on the ground. But in the NFL, if the shoulder hits the ball, you've got to hold it. That was not a punch. Yeah. That was not a strip. That was a shoulder hitting a ball on an already made done play, and McAvoy's a wide receiver theoretically. He's not like a blocking tight end. Like, you gotta.
That's a play that you shouldn't have to think twice. Like, oh, like that's a play that's going for a first down. that's a solid hit, but he holds on to the ball.
There are some eras on the Seahawks team that may or may not be over that are going to be very complicated and hard to talk about. The fact that the Tanner McAvoy era is going to be over after this year is something I'm okay with.
Yeah, he's going to be on his way with Blair Walsh. But, like, the only way I don't fumble in the NFL is if, like, I get hit and the ball comes out and I immediately land on it. Like, that's the only scenario where I don't cough up the ball. But an NFL wide receiver, that kind of play is inexcusable.
Yeah.
We need to take a short break. We need to sort of collect ourselves. I know it's going to come undone right as we start talking again, but we'll take a short break right now and then get to the rest of the show after this. We are back, and Spike, one thing that's apparent to me and apparent to a lot of people on Sunday, and we can get into something else talking about this, but Bobby wasn't close to 100% yesterday. Clearly, he was not Bobby Wagner, for lack of better terms. He wasn't as fast. He wasn't as strong. He missed at least one tackle, I saw. It wasn't his best game by a mile, and you question why he was in there for as long as he was.
Yeah, totally. Totally, you question it. I mean, the Seahawks defense was desperate. They were desperate. And we're gonna get into some Bobby Wagner stuff in a second, but, like, before that, I just want to say, like, they had, like, a jailbreak blitz where Bobby Wagner was sort of held and people were complaining about it. But, like, I have never seen the Seahawks blitz on third down just out of straight desperation like that. And then Jared Goff was able to complete a pass and move the ball, and they scored a touchdown on that drive. But, like, the desperation coming off of the team yesterday was something that we haven't seen before. It's something that we've forced in other teams. We saw it against the Eagles. We forced a couple of those desperation blitzes, and that's where we beat them on that cover zero beater with Doug Baldwin. Watching the Seahawks play desperate defense was weird and sad.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like they were doing everything they could to patch the floodgates. And they just opened right up. I think that, you know, they saw the avalanche coming down the mountain, and they were doing all they could to stop it before it got to them. Obviously, it didn't work. Obviously, they scored a touchdown on that drive, and they went on to score more points. But it was a Seahawks defense that, you know, they didn't have an identity, and we didn't see the Seahawks defense that we always saw. We saw a defense on its heels every play of the game. And I think some of that stems from, you know, the threat of Todd Gurley taking it to the house whenever he touches the ball and, you know, not getting sustained pressure on Jared Goff so they could move the ball in the passing game.
They didn't really do much in the passing game, and we got a strip sack. We hit him a couple times. I mean, he definitely had more time than we would have liked, but, like, the pass defense was by no means the issue.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what did, I mean, Tark Early offers, like, 9 yards a carry. Like,
yeah,
no, it was,
I was
crazy. No, I'm just saying, like, it's worth as we sort of digest this game and use it to project forward, because for the first time, even when the Cardinals and the 49ers beat us out for the division lead, it never felt like they were miles better than the Seahawks. And I believe at full strength, the Seahawks are still within reach of the Rams, but it does feel for the first time that we are the second best team in the division by a real margin.
Right.
And it's worth diagnosing the issues with the team. And really what it comes down to is in this game, like, the defense was just too shredded with injuries, because you look at it and you're like, man, it just was the run defense and their ability to misdirect. And again, some of that is game flow, that they didn't have to throw at the middle of the field, but also they couldn't throw at the middle of the field. Earl Thomas is still Earl Thomas. Like, this team isn't trash. They gave up a weird 70-yard third down play to Todd Gurley when the game was getting out of hand. But, like, if Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are themselves, that doesn't happen. So in terms of diagnosing the issues, weirdly, even though we gave up 41 points, in terms of long-term diagnoses, the defense isn't the issue.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah, just going back real quick, I was saying, like, the constant threat Gurley running the ball and getting these chunk gains allowed them to operate sufficiently in the passing game. Not shred it up, but you know what I'm saying. Like just be able to move the ball.
Yeah, and it was the defensive line. Again, this is where the game flow stuff comes into play. The defensive line could never pin their ears back because if they missed a tackle on Gurley, he was going to basically take it to the house. Right. And so that affects both the short passing game and the running game negatively. Like, watching Michael Bennett have to be a little tentative on, because A, he doesn't know what's happening because they have total control of the game. They have their whole playbook at their disposal. And B, he doesn't have anyone behind him that he trusts. That's a scary place to be playing from, and it didn't work. Didn't go great.
Yeah, and I was saying before, the tackling was as bad as I've seen it in years. I think that, you know, credit to Todd Gurley for, you know, being such a special player, but at the same time, you have to execute a lot better. I think that's as poor of tackling as I've seen probably in the Pete Carroll era, at least in the Legion of Boom era.
Yeah, I mean, well, and again, though, a lot of that is Bobby Wagner. I mean, it's the whole team. But, like, Bobby Wagner had zero missed tackles coming into this game. I think he had, like, four in the first half. Yeah. Like, what is happening?
It was apparent, and...
And I think we should dive into the Earl Thomas stuff.
Because we're not the only person to really notice how Bobby Wagner played. And more famously, or infamously, Earl Thomas made note of it and said that the backups could have done just as good of, or just as poor of a job, really. And then Bobby had a particularly interesting response. Spike, do you have that screenshot pulled up?
I do. Wow, I didn't know if I did. Keep my name out your mouth. Stop being jealous of other people's success. I still hope you keep balling, bro. And look, I think both of these guys are right and wrong at the same time. Yeah. Earl is right. Bobby probably shouldn't have played. A, they need him. Like, the Seahawks are not out of the playoffs. If the Falcons lose tonight, the Seahawks basically control their own destiny. Like, so they need Bobby Wagner against Ezekiel Elliott to be at full strength. And he might be, but he might have re-injured him. You know what I mean? Like, playing three quarters of a game of football isn't going to help him heal his hamstring. Yeah. The other thing is Earl just had that very same injury, sat out two games, and came back looking like Earl Thomas. He didn't let his ego get in the way of it. So I get where Earl Thomas is coming from in his critique. That said, he shouldn't have said it to the media. There's no need for that. Don't do that. Don't do it.
And while Bobby's just reacting to what Earl Thomas said, like, it's not the best look on him either, how he said it, like, about other people's success. That just, I feel like that's just really weird for him to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really offer anything else on that. I mean, like, you don't want guys not beefing in the locker room, but, like, if there's that tension, I mean, like, yeah, you can use it to, like, fuel it and like, propel your team to success, but, like, at the same time, like, you don't want, like, the two core players on your defense, you know, to be butting heads.
I'll say this. My understanding of Earl Thomas from talking to people who talk to, you know, whatever, is that he has a level of pride and competitiveness that even though we, like, obviously see it sort of on the field, it extends into who he is as a person. Right. Like, his insane competitiveness is there. And this is the first season where I think people are talking about him not being the best player on the Seahawks defense. And so the potential for a feud to be there is, like, real. And it's minor, and this is all minor, and, like, if you choose to read what Bobby is saying charitably, then it's, like, not a huge deal, and they'll settle it. But I think it comes down from Earl being, like, a weird dude.
Yeah,
like,
I think
Earl is, like, a weird dude, and I think that that's where a lot of this is coming from.
I think a lot of it on both sides stems from the competitiveness that they both have. You know, Earl, you know, being the competitor he is and weird dude on and off the field, and Bobby's competitiveness where he wants to be on the field and he wants to play and he wants to make these tackles for the Seahawks. And so all of it stems from, you know, how they compete. And yeah, I think that I'm not reading this really charitably or like in a negative way. It's just kind of weird, I think, for me.
Yeah,
I'm in a gray area with that.
I don't care.
We're talking about this because, you know, yeah, it's something that doesn't really matter in the big picture, and the Seahawks got their ass kicked on Sunday.
Well, I mean, I will say, like, it kind of matters because, like, those are the two guys who you, again, we're not going to get into the roster stuff today, but those are the two guys, ideally, you're still building around if there is, like, a defensive overhaul coming in the next year or two. Sorry, sneezing on Mike. That's disgusting.
It's okay. Yeah, the Seahawks played a disgusting game, so that's the theme of this podcast, disgustingness.
Also, Earl Thomas is young, y'all. He was drafted when he was, like, 14. He's only 28. Like,
yeah, he was drafted when I think he was younger than I am.
20? Yeah, he was 20. Yeah, Bobby's only 1 year younger. Like, those two dudes, as much as it's looking like the Cam Chancellor extension was a mistake, if you're 27, 28, getting that 3-year extension, 4-year extension makes sense. Those guys should be signed long term.
Yeah, you know, but you know, you play the numbers game. Like, usually, you know, 27, 28, that's really a safe zone to give a kind of extension like that.
Yep.
I think now's a good time to take a little break. I think that if we keep talking about this Earl and Bobby stuff, Spike and I are going to have a little feud on Twitter. And he might have to block me. I might have to block him. Tweets will be tweeted and deleted. So we'll collect ourselves again. Come back to you after this.
All right, we are back. Locked On Seahawks, Big Loser Podcast. God, we lost by a lot. It sucked. So the next thing that we want to dive into is sort of the failures of the Seahawks offense against that Rams defense. And we talked a little bit about Tanner McAvoy, but the issue was pretty much systemic and team-wide in terms of the inability for skill position players, with the notable exception of J.D. McKissic from being able to make an impact in this game. Grant, did you see anything from any of the skill position players on the team, with the exception of McKissic, that made you think that this was going well, that there's a future for these guys on the team?
I didn't see anything remarkable from really any of the skill position players, with the exception of McKissic. I think that they struggled mightily to get separation that put on a lot of plays, and when they were open, Russell Wilson was getting pressured and ultimately sacked. If he wasn't getting pressure, he was creating the pressure on his own, which is a whole nother topic. But it was probably the most poor game I've ever seen from this group of wideouts.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin was invisible. I am convinced he has got some lingering injury based on his last couple games where he really hasn't done anything. And you see him still creating separation from his breaks and his double moves, but then you see him a step slow on the deep ball. You see him an inch short when he jumps up for those sort of high catches that you can just picture Doug Baldwin climbing the ladder and making some of those catches, and the ball's just going off his fingertips. It looks like he's lacking explosiveness, and it might be a groin situation. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on with him, but there's something there. Then you see guys like Preach and Lockett who just, they're fine, but like a couple weeks ago we were comparing them to, or I wasn't, but there were people out there worried that Preach was going to demand some sort of massive $50 million extension or something. And these guys are fungible NFL receivers. They're good, but they're not great.
Yeah, they're
right
not
now.
Alshon Jeffrey good. I think that was the comparison.
That was wild. Yeah, look, things happen. Yeah. People say things, and you know, I'm sure I've said some things that are not accurate. Yeah. And then there's Jimmy Graham, who did not impose himself on the game, had a huge drop early on an explosive pass that would have really changed the flow of the game in a bunch of different ways, would have flipped field position, would have given the Seahawks a chance to make some early strides into Rams territory. And as good as he's been in the red zone this year, again, we're at that point where it's like, do you re-sign Jimmy Graham given the needs across this roster? I don't know. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. I think there's a right or wrong number, and the question is, will someone else offer him enough more that he'll leave? But I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's at the point where you wonder if the red zone touchdowns are worth it when you look at the overall production and the overall impact on the team. And obviously at the right price, you bring Jimmy Graham back, but if it hurts the team and if it stunts the production of the whole entire offense, then maybe it's not worth it.
Yeah, and then you have our terrible running game, which is terrible, and I don't, like, it's just terrible. And some of that is the offensive line. Obviously, this is going to be a nightmare matchup for Ethan Posick, and it was. I didn't anticipate it being a nightmare matchup for Dwayne Brown, dealing with a suddenly rejuvenated Robert Quinn. That was
I'm convinced he only, like, gets up like this to play the Seahawks.
Yeah. I agree. I'm so annoyed. I'm just so annoyed.
It was an annoying game to watch because whenever you watch a Seahawks game, it always feels like you're kind of suffocating in the first place. But you always knew that the Seahawks were going to kind of be that annoying team and stay in the game and eventually maybe take the lead. It didn't feel remotely like any of this during the whole game. And it was just an annoying game to watch, knowing that there wasn't that possibility of the Seahawks scrapping back into this game. They weren't moving the ball, and the Rams, you know, they had balls bounce their way. I think that the teams are obviously closer in talent than they were in the scoreboard, and obviously injuries play a factor in that too. But, you know, this it didn't feel like the Seahawks had a shot once, you know, the game got started and things started to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah, it was real bad. It was real bad.
It was a bad, bad game.
Yeah, usually we tip a cap to the other team, like, one phase of it, but you sort of got to tip it across the board. They were better
every phase had at least one dominant player. In offense, you had Todd Gurley. In defense,
Andrew
obviously,
Whitworth,
Aaron Donald. The entire Rams offensive line, really, in the run game specifically, like I said, Todd Gurley wasn't getting touched for at least 2 yards when he started to carry the ball. And, you know, special teams, you look at Farrell Cooper and their blocking, and defense, it goes without saying, Aaron Donald, and their whole line. Russell Wilson was sacked how many times? I lost count. I honestly did. It was just a dominant performance by the Rams. So, like, you have to tip your cap to them. There's no, oh, well, you know, this happened. Blair Walsh missed a field goal. The Seahawks really could have won that game. Like, the balls didn't bounce their way on a few plays, but really, you know, it was a solid performance across the board for the Rams, and it's warranted to say that they should just was that a changing of the guard?
I mean, they're younger, they're faster, they're better, and the question is how the Seahawks respond. I mean, it's tricky, and I think we're going to be talking about this a lot, but there's a couple levels of rebuild you could dive down to or not or whatever, but at the end of the day, the roster as it currently stands for the Seahawks with all those guys on IR is not as good as the Rams. And if it is their day, of course they can still beat a team. We saw it against the Eagles. They were able to beat a really good Eagles team by playing a really sound four quarters of football, getting a lead, because this team can definitely play with a lead, even though they can't run the ball because of how Russell Wilson is able to execute when the threat of the run is there. But they cannot play from behind the way they used to. Against Jacksonville, they did. You know, they came back from 17 down and had a shot to win it late. So, I don't know. Maybe, like, it's also possible that, like, really the bounces went against us. And this is what is so anomalous about this game is that it felt like we gave up. Like, early in the game, Seahawks fans were booing.
Yeah,
and that felt,
I think.
It felt wild.
Or 13-0,
yeah. Once that Todd Gurley run breaks at the end of the first half and turns the game into a laugher, and that run, it was something like, Danny Kelly tweeted it, it was like, it's the first 3rd-and-20 run since Tim Tebow to go for a touchdown. Like, it's just like that never happens. It never happens, and the Seahawks let it happen. That was laughable. That was so out of character for this team that if they can put this behind them and they can go out and beat the Cowboys, and why not? I mean, the Cowboys barely beat the Raiders. They probably shouldn't have. Yeah, they have Ezekiel Elliott coming back, but we probably have Bobby Wagner better and KJ Wright coming back, so it's not like our run defense is going to be the same terrible unit that we ran out against the Rams. You know, there is hope that this team can win a couple more games. I don't know, man. Oh, yeah, I don't know.
It's not to the point where all hope is lost, and I wouldn't say it's close to that. I wouldn't use the term in this offseason rebuild as much as I would say kind of retool. You have that core in your roster and you have players to build around still, and so you're not looking for that complete overhaul except in the special teams unit.
Yeah.
But
what's even the point I want to make? I don't know. This team is probably going to go 9-7. Like, it could go 10-6. Like, that's a good season.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be that the NFC is shook out in a really, really weird way. It's like whatever. Like, that happens.
Yeah.
Like, if we were in the AFC West, which we were for a while, I remember, real heads remember, Seahawks are an AFC West team in the past, we'd be winning that division. We'd be handily winning that division. It wouldn't be an issue. So it's just like, it's a wild fluke of circumstance that we could get to 10-6 and not make the playoffs. And honestly, it would be because Blair Walsh missed a 52-yard kick against Atlanta. Like, that's it. There it is. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think that even, like, I wouldn't say we were spoiled, but yeah, like, the Seahawks, we're spoiled. It's like we're used to being that dominant team, and, like, now that we're, like, taking a peg down by these injuries, like, we just need to, like, think about, you know, how successful the Seahawks have really been this year. I think that, you know, as early as week 5, we were like, yeah, the NFC's wide open. And, you know, the Seahawks just kept getting more and more injured. And you look at the injuries across the board, a fully healthy Seahawks team, you know, it does fairly well. It does even better, obviously, than the Seahawks are doing right now. But it does fairly well against the heavyweights in the conference. And you see them beat the Eagles even with all the injuries that they had. And you know, like we said, all hope's not lost, and that the team is still going to be in good shape. A fully healthy team is going to be in good shape. Do we need to miss the playoffs to, you know, kind of get that competitive chip back? I don't know, because we have all these insane competitors on there. But it'll definitely add perspective, I think.
I don't think we need to miss the playoffs. I don't think making or missing the playoffs is going to matter for anything other than whether or not we play in the playoffs and where we draft. I'll say that. Like, there's talk about teardown or, like,
no.
It's a pretty good place to be, having a winning record when you lose 4 all pros. That's a pretty good place to be. And then you look at a team like the Saints, and I think this is the important thing, is, like, we haven't hit well in the draft over the last few years. We've had a couple decent drafts and a couple bad drafts, and that's going to hurt you. That is going to be a rot at the center of your roster when it comes to depth. And we have no depth compared to where we were. It is a big, big issue, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And, like, yeah, that's the reality that we're living with right now. But you look at a team like the Saints, and mind you, people are comparing the Saints rebuild with the Seahawks. The Saints had a bottom 6 defense for, like, 8 out of 9 years. Like, they were a disaster zone. And Drew Brees is – I love Russell Wilson. Drew Brees is at his peak better than Russell Wilson. Doesn't really matter. What matters is they went out and got 4 Pro Bowlers in this draft and are suddenly a contender again. Like, you got to draft well. And the scary thing is the Seahawks pushed all in on this year and are going to be shy on draft picks next year. But the guys they got are Dwayne Brown. Okay, that's great. And
Sheldon Richardson.
Sheldon Richardson. But, like, and the Richardson, if he walks, you get a comp pick for him, but that comp pick doesn't come for another year. But still, you were in a position where you've actually improved, like, places you needed. Like, and if Dwayne Brown is a medium-term answer at left tackle, then that's worth that second rounder where, you know, the Saints went out and sort of got Ryan Ramczyk was with their second pick in the draft, which was a first rounder because of the Brandon Cooks trade, but neither here nor there. So all of that is to say we need to draft better. We need to not get hurt. And we need to not panic and trade Russell Wilson.
Right? Yeah, no, that talk is ridiculous. I was shaking my head at my timeline this morning because I saw multiple tweets about the Seahawks possibly trading him. And it was just speculation, and it wasn't any national reporters. I'll say that. It was just, you know, people on Twitter, you know, talking about the idea of it. And it's a stupid idea.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. It's like, they haven't drafted another quarterback. You don't trade Russell Wilson to go trade to also get Alex Smith and pay him a bunch of, like, you're saving like $6 million net. If you had drafted a Dak Prescott and you're like, and then you end up in that Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees situation, we can have this conversation. If you have Jimmy Garoppolo even on the roster, you can have this conversation with a guy, but we've got Austin Davis back there. And Austin, like, we don't have the next quarterback on the roster, so you don't trade the quarterback you have. It's that simple. You don't go out and acquire Alex Smith and pay him full price. Like, that's crazy.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, we're going to get way too mad. Today's show, I think...
Is anyone listening to this? No one wants to listen.
Yeah, no. I think we'll have a pretty small audience. Misery loves company, so we'll have some people tuning in, but...
We love you guys. You made it through. Oh boy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. If you go on iTunes and leave a review and wallow in your sadness, you add your Twitter handle into it and you can be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. Maybe you can play a draft.com draft and you can draft a team of all-stars and use the promo code LONFL to get a free draft.
Oh, then, thanks, by the way, for telling me I had to draft Antonio Brown when I was trying to talk myself out of it.
I feel like that's, like, such a bad coin to flip for you every week.
Yeah, it is.
I think it was a bad week for Spike, all in all.
It was fine. Even though I had Russell Wilson, I would have been fine, but now I'm going to lose. So, thanks, Grant.
It's okay. I think that we all need
to... It's not okay! You don't get to say it's okay, guys.
It's a high stakes $3.
It's $1.
$1. All right. $1 on the line. All right. You could have went to a grocery store and got a few gumballs with that. So
yeah,
I apologize. I owe you a few gumballs, and we owe you about 40 minutes of your time for listening to this podcast. So for Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off,
and I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.